You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 16th of January. Jazz were bad last night. We'll look at it and try to big picture it for a moment. The fans got upset with Rodney, and he had an interesting comment afterwards. We'll look at that. Thurl Bailey wowed me during the broadcast. We'll share that with you, and it's a Time Machine Tuesday. All coming up on a busy day on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing great. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast about the Utah Jazz. And giving you a little extra insight, expertise, look behind the curtain, as well as some geeky numbers on each and every night. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today's show brought to you by my good friends over at the store. I'm not lying about the mudslide cookie, by the way. We had friends in town. I went to the store on Sunday. I brought them home, and they said, that's the best cookie I've ever had. See, I'm not lying to you about it. I wouldn't lie to you anyway. So I don't know where that, I don't know, nobody even accused me of that. It's brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai and Stevens Henniger College as well. All right, let's get into last night. The Jazz were bad. There's really no other way to, like, they just had a bad night. They weren't very good last night. And the offense is scuffling. Over the last 15 games, the offense ranks last in the NBA. They're having a tough time. A bunch of guys are in slumps, and whether they're building off each other or not, I don't know. The offense actually is getting as many good looks as it got before, and for a while, we were like third in the NBA in three-point shooting. Now, over the last 11 games, we're 30th in the league in three-point shooting. So there is a factor here where I think some guys are worn out. And I think, Joe Ingles is probably the top of that list, right? 20 minutes last night, no points, no rebounds, one assist. He's been incredible in his effort, what he's done with his body to be able to play 30 minutes a night, to be able to handle it. And now it just seems like he's on fumes. It's probably somewhat realistic. Donovan, 2 of 8 from 3 last night. Donovan shooting 31% from 3 in the last 10 games. There is a collective offensive slump. Now, by the end of last night, the offensive rating was okay, but it's a little misleading because last night the Jazz put up 29 irrelevant fourth quarter points and made the offensive numbers look a little bit better. But, I mean, going into last night, over the last 15 games, you had AB shooting 33% and 20% from three. You had Rodney at 38 and 37. Joe Ingles at 40 and 34. I mean, I think we did this yesterday on the show. Jonas at 44 and 33. Joe Johnson, Ricky Ruby, guys are struggling. The offense is struggling. And the defense hasn't been great. And the question this whole season, and frankly a lot of last season, was whether or not the Jazz defense without Rudy could hold together very well. Last night, when Derek Favors is on the floor, the defense, I think, was kind of outrageous. According to Andy Larson, I think it was a 130. According to some of the other numbers, I didn't have it quite as high, but I think Andy's right. Like defense wasn't good last night. Some of this all plays together, right? That you're not making shots, the game gets difficult, and the juice inside the game gets difficult. But the Jazz fell behind early. Rubio had a tough stretch. He missed some shots, turned the ball over two times. I think he was 0 for 3 with two turnovers early in the game. And they were down early. And Victor Oladipo dictated this game. When he was off the floor is the two times the Jazz made their run. So a little bit of the Jazz plus-minus numbers last night are pretty misleading because Oladipo seemed to dictate the entire game. 28.6 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals last night. Plus 27 when he's on the floor in what ended as a 15-point win. But the Jazz runs all came when he was off the floor. Two of them. That was it. So that's interesting. Last night, yesterday I said on the podcast, I didn't know if we could take advantage of that. They could, but the rest of it, Indiana was just better. Indiana might be better. Indiana's 23-15 now. 24-15 when Oladipo plays. Indiana might be really good. And on postcast last night, Ron Boone and I talked about whether or not that might be a model. I think this is something you're going to hear from me a lot. And that is, let me just kind of back up and try to put a big picture on this. So when the year started, we thought the Jazz could probably optimistically be somewhere between, say, what? 37 and 45 wins. 45 was kind of this mass optimism. Everything goes perfectly well along the way, and the Jazz get to 45. And probably 45 was even our number of, like, everything goes right. And our pride number of, you know, Gordon's left and we're going to prove you wrong. The reality was, I think I had us at 41, 42, and then the schedule came out and I dropped us a few because the schedule was brutal. We played tougher teams. We had our tough games are all early, and nobody's, you know, when the easier games late in the year, you get some of those games late in the year, you kind of want them. So I dropped now. That was, and the question was, while Denver can and Minnesota were going to be elite offensive teams and poor defensive teams, what happens if we are an elite defensive team and a poor offensive team? I think we kind of conceded that we probably weren't going to be very good offensively. So that's where we started the year. Okay, Rudy Gobert then has missed 25 of the last 30 games. So we're not elite offensively. I mean, defensively. At all. Rudy's the key to us being elite defensively. He's the best defensive player in the league. So had you told me at the beginning of the year, okay, we're going to try to figure out who this team is. They're probably around a 40-some-odd win team, right around that range. We're going to see how good you can be if you're elite defensively and you're not great offensively. And, oh, by the way, Rudy Gobert is going to miss a stretch of 25 out of 30 games. Okay, then what's happening, then I said, you know, then I'd be like, all right. And then you are where you are right now. And I think it's wearing guys out. I think that's the impact, is guys are being stretched, given everything they have, and are worn out. And if we talked about kind of all year long, there's been a lack of a collective understanding, rightful order of the basketball universe. It's being reformed. Now, part two of this moving forward that you're going to hear from me kind of incessantly is the Jazz have two fabulous pieces to build around for the future. Right? Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. Like, let's just be honest about it. And then who supplements them well? Does Rubio fit? Does Hood fit? Does AB fit? Does Royce O'Neal fit? Does Udo fit? Like, that. Now that's the game. And the truth is, the beauty of the NBA 82-game season and the realm of opponents you play and the difficulties in the schedules and the burden that it is the truth comes to the forefront. You cannot hide in an NBA season. There have never been bad players that have had good years. And quite frankly, there have been very few good players who've had bad years. In a lot of ways, where we are now is you have two beautiful pieces, two incredible pieces. And now the rest is a discovery of who's capable of what over 82 games and how they mesh. And the beauty of it is the truth is impossible to hide. Impossible to hide. And to me, that's where what I'm watching. I mean, there's an argument that when Rudy comes back, if I'm Quinn, I'm just putting Donovan and Rudy on the floor together for every minute. Of their, like, they're each playing 32 and they only play them together. Boom, boom. Just let these guys figure each other out. How are you going to work together? What are your skill sets? What matches? What doesn't? How do you learn that pick and roll? What do you do? And in many ways, that's probably, if I'm Quinn, what I might do. There is a huge event going on at Murdoch Hyundai. 1.99% financing at Murdoch Hyundai. They've partnered with Golden West Credit Union. And what's taking place is that they have financing at 1.99%, but they also have it so you don't make a payment for a little while. And so therefore you get a little extra cash. Then you get the Murdoch guarantee, which is the 5-day exchange policy, the oil changes and car washes for life, the price match guarantee. Those are the things that make Murdoch the no-regret dealership. And we're talking about Murdoch Hyundai, which are in Logan, Linden, and in Murray at 4646 South State Street. The beauty to there is was what Hyundai brings. I didn't know a lot about it. I've learned about it since I've partnered with the Murdochs. The brand is just fabulous. The value for your dollar is unequaled. The Santa Fe, if you're looking for an SUV, is as solid as it comes with a absolutely incredible package of what value you get for the dollar. And, by the way, the 2018 Hyundai Ioniq is in as well if you're looking for a hybrid. So check it out, 4646 South State Street, 1.99% financing. They have it just till January 20th. So head over to 4646 South State Street. Today's show is also brought to you by Stevens Henniger College. Is it time for you to make a step in your career to improve your life? And Stevens Henniger College might be the answer. They've won several best in states for a reason. Stevens Henniger College is built for you to succeed, to make yourself a little bit better, to help students get jobs sooner. It's extremely hard at different times in your life to stay in school, keep going, but Stevens Henniger has built a model that helps you do that. 4-week fast-paced classes, 10 hours a week of classes built for your success. You don't have the tools, they give you a laptop, and at 4 weeks, they give you a laptop, and when you graduate, it's free. Financial aid planning at the beginning so you don't have any surprise costs along the way. You're working already, you have a family, and you look at the future, it's not what you want, you're missing that degree, you know you can have more, you know you have a better life. Stevens Henniger can do that for you. Give them a text, keyword 88588. Text keyword to 88588 or visit uneducation.com. See if Stevens Henniger is the answer for you to give you the opportunities that you've never had before. Keyword to 88588 to find out more about Stevens Henniger College. All right, the big story around the Jazz today is some of the fans in the arena booed Rodney Hood. I don't want to overplay this. I think it was few. Rodney came out firing. I think he missed 6 of his first 7 shots in about 5 minutes. I'm never one who wants to like tell fans how I think they should totally do things. I'm not sure it's great to boo your own player. I'm not quite sure I see booing your own player if he's missed a few shots when he's your shooter. So I don't see. I didn't quite get it. I don't think it's great. I don't think it's good. I also almost at the moment was weird, frankly. I mean, Rodney just came out firing, which he was trying to get done. And that's fine. Like, that's who he is. We want him to shoot if he doesn't shoot other guys. And he wasn't making. And so it felt like, whoa, dude, like, mellow out if you're not making some shots. And Rodney needs to find a way to turn the 6 or the 3, what is it, probably the 4 of 12 game, the 4 of 13 game into a 5 of 11. That makes him really good. But that's the one thing. His amount of nights where he on a team where is below 33% is high. But let's make sure we also understand that what's being asked out of Rodney Hood for the 23rd pick of a draft, who's a really good player, I think that booing was a little bit of, we wanted you to be this, and that's clear you're not going to be that. And I think that's probably what that was, and it's not, and in that sense, it's not fair. Because, yes, there's a discovery to what Rodney Hood might be this year, and I think we're learning that to ask Rodney to be a lead guy offensively is probably too much. Now, Let's make sure we understand that that's the exact same thing we thought about Gordon Hayward. Okay? Let's make sure that we understand that that is the exact same thing we thought about Gordon Hayward. So when Gordon Hayward got put into the lead dog position for the first time, it was ugly. And fans booed him too. And it was an overwhelming season for him. And very similar, he didn't have a lot of support. He struggled badly. And in turn, we wondered whether he was ever going to be good enough to be that guy. Right? That was that 13-14 season for Hayward is the first time he kind of becomes the lead guy, and he struggles. Right? The Jazz don't win a lot of games. We end the year probably somewhat similar to this team in a lot of ways. And you're asking, and Rodney's in the same situation. And we're not giving Rodney a lot of leeway to do it. I'm not either. I'm not sure that I know if I think that Rodney, as I just said, is that guy. But let's let him experience it and figure it out. If we look at Gordon and Rodney and compare, and there are some differences, but Rodney's 2 years older. Gordon Hayward, in that 13-14 season, the first year he becomes the man, plays 36 minutes a night. He shoots 41% from the floor, 30% from three, and 45% effective field goal percentage. Rodney Hood's way better than that. He's shooting a lot more. His usage rate's way higher. His field goal percentage is down. His three-point percentage is 38 compared to 30. His effective field goal percentage is 49 to 45. Points per game is the exact same. Free throw shooting's better. His rebounding is down, is not the same, and his assists are not the same. He's not Gordon Hayward in that other sense. But purely getting shots off offensive load, Gordon was terrible in the 13-14 season. Terrible. Because he didn't have a lot of support. He was in a new role. It was incredibly difficult. And he got better. Right? He ups his shooting percentage the next year from 41 to 45. He shoots his three-pointing from 30 to 36. Then 15-16, he actually kind of plateaus a little bit. We think he's where he's going to be, and then he bursts out in 16-17, 26 years old. Rodney's going through that 13-14 season. And Gordon was playing with Trey Burke, Derek Favors, Alec Burks, Richard Jefferson, and his Cantor. I mean, that was not a good team. That's the team that halfway through the year, they go 25 and 57 that year. This team's a little better than that, but that was quite a burden on Gordon. And he got better in the 14-15 season, struggled in 15-16, and then blew up in 16-17. So a little bit where I think there's not a fairness to what's going on for Rodney. I do think this is interesting. I don't disagree with Rodney on this. But I think it's interesting. Rodney said, this is my fourth year. This is my best season I've had since I've been here. To me, what's revealing about that is it tells you how these guys self-evaluate. Now, I think it's his hardest season. I think it's the most he's been asked to do. I'm not sure I think it's his best season. But he's averaging more points than he's ever averaged before. That's what he's talking about. Right? That's how players self-evaluate. They don't self-evaluate that his effective field goal percentage is not a career high. Or They don't self-evaluate that he's rebounding less than he did either the last 2 years. They don't self-evaluate that his assist rate's low. No. They self-evaluate on whether they're scoring. His usage rate's at 28%, up from 23%. That's a skill. The fact that his assist rate is way below 3 years ago, his rebounding rate is a career low. That's his block rate is no different. His right steal rate's right on his average. Like that's the players evaluate themselves based on points per game. I think that's what was telling to me. I'm not sure I think he's wrong, by the way. I'm not sure I think that he's wrong because I think this is his hardest season. And so, but I think it's very interesting to get how a player views their own season. And Rodney's a scorer and he's having his highest points per game. And so this is his best season. He might be right. Like, I'm not saying he's wrong, but I'm just telling you that's what jumps out to me about that. So in summation, Rodney has had a lot thrown on his plate this year and then the evolution of Donovan around him. And he's got to – it's hard. It's really, really hard. And other guys, almost every guy who's not one of those picks that just comes in the league and dominates from day one struggle with this. And he's struggling with it. So – that's my take on that. Thurl Bailey was unbelievable on our broadcast last night. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull 5 minutes of that talking about his experiences. A little less. I'm editing out as much of the play-by-play as I can. There wasn't much. We were down 20 in third quarter, and I kind of just talked to Thurl. So I've edited out the play-by-play. So it's in the midst of the game about Martin Luther King's birthday, his parents being at the march, and his life experiences. So I'm gonna give that to you coming up here, and then we'll play Time Machine Tuesday. Go back in jazz history as we do. Over at 6200 South and 20th East is the store. I love the store. We had some really good friends from LA in town. Actually, it was our friend who is the executive producer for The Good Place and Parks and Rec previous, so that. Why the Parks and Rec references on the show and things like that. And so anyway, we went over there and he's like, what is this? And I was like, it's a neighborhood store. He's like, this is awesome. It is. It's exactly what is so great about the store. It's a neighborhood store. In a day and age where like neighborhoods are kind of gone, there's what we have, the store. Great product line. They got the new Jacobson Salt line in for you. So, you know, Jeff and Scott are out looking for the best things that they can find. They're out there finding the best quality items, and they're out there that are hot in various towns, and then they're bringing them to you here, whether it's their Snake River Farms meats, whether it's the cold brew that they have. The Nitro Cold Brew is really good. We grabbed some of the lemonade and had a Arnold Palmer off their little iced tea lemonade bar that they have when you first walk in. The Cakes de Fleur, a local cake company. The neighborhood rolls are fabulous. All sorts of fun items at the store that give you that feel of that this has been specially selected for you and allows you to have that neighborhood feel. It's the store, 6200 South, it's actually 2050 East. Stop by, make sure you grab the chips. Those are the store chips are the best. My wife just adores those. Stop by. It's the store. 6200 South, 2050 East. We'll have news about a Locked On listener appreciation card coming up for you. All right, here is my conversation with Thurl in last night's game, and then we'll do Time Machine Tuesday right after that. Let's talk about Dr. Martin Luther King then.
Okay.
Give me your perspective. You grew up. You're not
in D.C.
You grew up in D.C. Is your primary memory that I Have a Dream, or do you have something else that kind of goes back into your childhood that you remember so much?
Well, my parents were at the I Have a Dream speech.
No way.
Yeah, I have some pictures of us three kids with sitter while they went, and I was only 2 years old, so my memory of that day is not there, but I, from what my mom and dad talked about, they knew it was going to be just a historic day.
Jazz now down 20 again after a fast break the other way. So you're born, if I remember correctly, in 60 or 61.
61.
So a lot of this is happening. You're 6, 7, 8 years old. When do you think it became the understanding of what was taking place and the rest? When do you think that became clear to you?
Well, when our county, our school system finally got around to desegregation, because it was slow in a lot of places. And Maryland was one of them. But
you mean the fact that the Brown versus Board of Education case happened before you were born?
Yeah, yeah.
You're calling that slow, huh?
But even then, even when it happened, there were a lot of local governments that took their time to follow through on it, and so it didn't happen everywhere right away. And so I remember, being bused to a white school. I remember when we got there, all the white parents there with picket signs, and there was some a lot of cops. Yeah, I remember those days very, very well.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, I was in elementary school, so I was sixth grade.
Wow, and how many kids were experiencing the same thing with you?
Oh, there were a lot. There were a lot. I mean, listen, as kids, we knew it was a good thing for us, and we just hoped that the kids we were going to school with knew it was a good thing to be able to, to have, blacks come to their school, something that maybe their parents didn't necessarily agree with, but you hope that the kids would, that new generation would be able to, get together and make the reality of Dr. King's speeches come to fruition.
And what was the reaction of those students when you came?
Being that young, it wasn't too bad. It was when I got older into junior high school, those impressionable years. When bullies start to come to fruition. So it was tough. It was tough until I got to high school, became the first black student government president of the high school, which was predominantly white at the time. So things were changing for the better.
Wow. All right, you got to do me a favor.
Yes, sir.
Next year, instead of one of my silly podcasts overanalyzing data that's irrelevant.
I wouldn't say that.
I would. I did. You and I, for Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, are going to do an extended conversation on this.
Would love to.
Student body president, huh? And you didn't even hire Karl Rove to get it done, huh?
No, I had some great educators, man, that got it. It was about every kid to them. And they taught me some of my greatest lessons.
Good people. Thurl, thank you very much. Appreciate it immensely.
All right, dude.
That is Big T. Good man. So Thurl's pretty awesome. We'll do, as I said, an extended version of that next year. Learn more about Thurl. All right, let's go into the bag of tricks. Here's the bag. What is our year? He pulls it out. 1982-83. Didn't we get that like last time? All right, let's look it up. We go to Basketball Reference, Utah Jazz, Franchise Index. This is how we do this. If you're thinking I have some very sophisticated system on how this works, I do not. And we look up the 1982-83 season. I think this is, this is not. This is Frank Layden. A Jazz team that year that did not have a great year. And so we head to January 16th. The Jazz were playing a back-to-back against the San Diego Clippers. The Jazz would win tonight, 115-111, over the Clippers. Game was played at whatever the sports arena was with an attendance of 2,728. How the league has changed. Clippers were led that night by Terry Cummings, who had 34. Craig Hodges had 24. Tom Chambers had 18. Al Wood, Bill Walton played for the Clippers that year. Michael Brooks, Jerome Whitehead, Randy Smith, Lionel Hollins, and Richard Anderson. The Clippers fell to 20-30 in front of 2,728 fans. The Jazz had four players with 20 or more. Ricky Green had 21. Daryl Griffith had 21 and 10 rebounds and 8 assists. Wow, I didn't know Golden Griff rebound like that. And played 43 minutes. Ben Paquette, Gentle Ben, had 22. Jeff Wilkins, Hot Rod called him the franchise, had 20 and 12. Other Jazz players that year, Danny Shays started. He played 18.7 rebounds, 5 assists. Ricky Williams played 3 minutes. J.J. Anderson played 22. Jerry Eves, still on the team. Mark Eaton played 3 minutes that night. So 82-83, the Jazz 17-24 for the win. The Jazz had won 2 in a row at that point, as they defeated the Dallas Mavericks the night before. The Mavericks were another not very good expansion team, poor team, as they were Mark McGuire, Jay Vincent, Jim Spanarkle, and that crew. The Golden Griff had 32 that year. This is the Golden Griff at this point in his third year of the season. Golden Griff, his rookie year, came out of Louisville, averaged 21 points a game. Very Donovan-esque. I'm curious to see something. The Jazz played Dallas at home the night before in front of 7,541. So the Jazz Time Machine Tuesday flashback. And the Jazz end up with a 115-111 win. The Jazz, things would get ugly. That would be the high point of the season. They were 17-24. They would then proceed to lose 14 of their next 16 games with singular wins over the Knicks and the Spurs in the midst of a lot of losses. And the Jazz would finish that year 30-52 under the direction of head coach Frank Layden. That, my friends, is Time Machine Tuesday. Thanks to Thurl Bailey for his comments. Thanks to the store, to Murdoch Hyundai, and to Stevens Henniger College. Thank you very much for tuning in to Locked On Jazz, supporting the program and being a part of it. Locked On NBA today, we'll have the biggest stories in the NBA. Yes, a lot on the Clippers and the Rockets, the nuttiness that is going went on last night. All good here. We didn't have to deal with that. On Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.